Look, I think you obviously go around the world and you build a name, you know, as a team, but you also build a personal name. And I think I've obviously been one of those players who really interact with the crowd more often than not. You know, take time out, go and sign autographs. And for the Barmy Army to have delivered that sort of fail was real special. Look, I mean, it was always going to be an emotional day. You know, playing your last test match at home. Not the result that I was after, but look, what Newlands has given me as a player, yeah, I think it's mind-boggling. And look, yeah, I knew it was going to be emotional. I couldn't even speak, but you know, walking around, giving my last sort of farewell wave, I just think yeah, that was special. But from the Barmy Army's point of view, yeah, thanks so much, guys. I mean, we've had plenty of series, home and away, tough fought, but you know, the way they get into the game. And I mean, a lot of times people would write it down to, you know, abuse. I saw completely the, you know, the difference. I mean, the same with the Australian crowds, you know, very often they can get into your face trying to make life uncomfortable. I almost saw that as motivation, you know, to get yourself going. So again, I mean, for them to have stood up and sang the songs and, you know, was really
It
special.
was a respect thing rather than abuse.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brooke.
Laverne, welcome to Bootlegger in Cape Quarter. Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket. Thank you for being here.
Well, afternoon. Thanks for having me. Looking obviously at a couple of your episodes. Looked real exciting, and yeah, hopefully I can form part of it.
Well, you're definitely one of the great guests that we're getting up front for this episode. So thank you for being here. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while, actually. What you been up to?
Yeah, I've been really busy the last sort of 7 months. I was busy setting up a mag and wheel repair center out in Fairgrove area. So that's been keeping me busy. Yeah, obviously had to import a lot of equipment, train staff. So yeah, we're up and running. We're officially trading now. Precision Mag and Wheel Repair Center, that is. So yeah, really looking
We'll drop the
forward.
link in the bio.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that little venture. I think obviously, you know, we've been so cricket driven that at times you need to just, you know, redirect or yeah, just take another little avenue and make sure that you look after yourself and keep yourself purposely driven.
You actually had that. I mean, I've known you since your playing days. We worked together a little bit. You always had that entrepreneurial spirit, right? Is that something that you've always wanted to do? You never were going to be a desk worker, right?
No, absolutely. I was always going to be my own boss and, you know, some other way. But yeah, look, I think, you know, there's always a lot of opportunity out there, you know, for us to get ourselves involved into. And I think being in the automotive industry, you know me, I love my cars. Obviously, you know, scratch the rims every now and again. So yeah, what better way to get involved? But yeah, I've got a fantastic Italian partner in the business. He's the IP behind the whole initiative, but a wonderful guy. And yeah, hopefully we can, you know, get the numbers going in the next couple of months.
Sure, it's been quite the journey. I was actually when I was doing my research, not that I needed to do too much on you. I know pretty much all about the Verne's career and how illustrious that's been. It seems like ages ago since that final test match at Newlands. I was there. It was a special occasion. It was your final test match at your beloved home ground, and that was the last test match before the COVID shit show that hit.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, it hit me hard as well. Because I mean, yeah, you probably know better than most that I was meant to have gone over to play for Somerset. COVID struck, and that propelled, you know, me to basically forced me into a different direction. So, yeah, look, obviously crazy things that happen in a very short space of time. But like you say, I think, you know, very often we don't even have time to sit back and reflect on the things that we've achieved on the field. I had a mate over last night at my place, and you know, he's from Noord-Transvaal, the Titans area. And he walked into my garage and he said, "Listen, man, whoa, let's just take a moment and soak it in." And look, I mean, life has obviously been fast-paced, and like I said, very often we don't even have time to sit down and really, you know, look at what you've achieved over your playing career. So yeah, a lot happened in a very short space of time, obviously during that COVID period. But yeah, it gave me a wonderful opportunity. I mean, obviously going into the broadcasting space with SuperSport and gave me a little footing into, you know, understanding, you know, what's happening behind the microphones. You know, obviously the voice, you know, that calls the action out in the park. But yeah, I think in many ways blessed as well to still be, you know, somehow involved in the cricket. I think straight after that, also the 21 World Cup in Dubai, had the opportunity to work with the Pakistan team.
Mm.
So understanding, you know, what it takes from a coaching point of view as well. Work with the legend Matthew Hayden, and yeah, that gave me a wonderful look into, you know, what life could be like after cricket. So yeah, in many ways, still blessed.
I mean, you obviously, you're kind of more in broadcasting these days than coaching. Is coaching still something that you want to do sporadically or more permanently?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a bit like, you know, when I started playing, I think, you know, you first needed to find out, are you going to be investing more time into your batting, into your bowling, and then of course you look at the opportunity or the window of opportunity at hand, and that used to be obviously bowling for me back then. But right now I got a footing into the broadcasting space, but coaching is still, you know, a big part of me. I'd like to, you know, mentor guys. I'd like to get involved in the coaching side of things. Funny enough, I mean, you know, every time I'm at these international games. Some of the bowlers will, you know, will run up to me in the mornings and, you know, how do we bowl this wobble, you know, the wobble seam. So, I mean, yeah, just to pass on, you know, that skill set, that knowledge, you know, that we've acquired over years, and then watch guys put it into play. I think that's the most important part. So, yeah, I definitely see myself still play a big part in developing players moving forward. I'm actually busy in talks with, funny enough, you know, Tanzanian cricket.
Oh, wow. With snakes there.
It's Ali Knakadin, yeah. So we're busy in talks. I might, you know, go over there for a little stint.
Mm.
I mean, you know, the stint that I've done with Namibian cricket as well. So,
yeah,
hopefully I can bring it home and play a bigger part, you know, in the domestic structure, because I do feel part of the way that we can empower domestic cricket is for us to play a bigger part, you know, in helping youngsters come through the ranks. But yeah, definitely still look forward to, you know, playing my part in the coaching arena.
I remember seeing you with some of the younger guys. It was quite cool. Whenever you came back from it, you were one of the players that were always at training when you got the chance to come back to Cape Town, not an international duty. And whether it was playing or not, you were there training, you were guiding the youngsters coming through. I think that's hugely important for these youngsters. Otherwise, you know, a youngster doesn't have those reference points that they've got it in their backyard. And it's important for those guys, the Proteas guys. That's one thing I think that the Western Province guys were always quite good at, was it might not be available for all the matches when they're back, you know, they need to rest, etc. But there was always this mentorship. There was always the coaches getting the senior guys involved. That thing was really good.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think, you know, there's a reason why we are there and experience firsthand, you know, what's happening out in the middle. But it's important to relay that message. I think a part of my younger years, I used to watch a Saul Willoughby operate. I used to watch a Alan Dawson operate.
Mm.
And a part of it is to obviously try and adopt the skill set, but more importantly, the mindset behind it. So, of course, you know, you're going to take whatever they give you or pass on to you, and then you need to go and formulate your own plan. You know, so for me, it was about, I want to get batters out. I think, you know, that was my job. So I want to make sure that, cool, I mean, Willoughby swung the ball back at the right ender. So LBW ball came into play, whereas Dorsey, you know, used to challenge your outside. It's obviously day in and day out. So I wanted to form a balance between the two. And I think, again, you know, you speak to younger bowlers and you try and make them aware of what it is that they're trying to do, you know, with the ball. Always talk about the stock ball. Do you have control of your action? And those are little messages and little languages that if you can guide the guys in the right direction, it's going to make you more effective out in the middle. So again, why I say, you know, we have a massive role to play, irrespective, you know, whether you've hung up your boots, but it's to get back down to, you know, the domestic level and help the guys. I mean, I speak to KJ Rabada all the time. You know, you'll always drop me a message, Vern, what do you think? You know, obviously having a bird's eye view of what's happening out in the middle. So it's important to, you know, to make him aware of, you know, what he's actually doing right. I think very often, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on what guys are doing wrong. But I think, you know, when a guy is doing something right, you also need to say to him, you know what, you're doing that perfectly well. And, you know, take out all the noise and just focus on, you know, doing that, you know, on a continuous basis. But yeah, again, to your point, it's important for us. I mean, you had Dale on the show in a couple of weeks ago. And what an athlete he's been, but more importantly, what an advert he's been for South African cricket. And the way that he's also helping bowlers, you know, in his own personal front. Yeah, that's what we need to do.
When I was doing my research for this episode, I looked at the numbers that yourself, Morne Morko and Dale Steyn as a trio, and it was ridiculous. I mean, the amount of wickets, I think it was over 330 wickets, test wickets, between the three of you when you guys played together. It's just phenomenal. I mean, each of you had a certain skill that was just so unique to that Proteas team and was such a success.
Yeah, I think we really complemented each other very well. I think you talk about skill sets, completely different bowlers. I think you obviously at Dale, they can swing the new ball. He can come back in his second and third spells and really rev the engine up to get it to 150 plus and make life really uncomfortable for batters. And then, of course, you had Morne, you know, pace and bounce. Obviously, myself, skill set of, you know, being able to move the ball around. So if you're an opposition batter and you have to play against a trio, I mean, the first question you probably ask yourself is, you know, where am I getting my runs from?
Yeah.
And in that is probably where we've been so successful, because we've been able to, you know, really strangle teams. I remember the one test match in Hamilton where, I mean, we bowled really well, but we just couldn't pick up wickets. They were 130 for two or something. And there was a couple of overs where myself and Dale got it just right. We picked up five wickets for none. And again, it's that mindset of, you know, where am I getting my next run from? So, I mean, let's not forget about Callis, you know, the role that he played. You know, he used to come in, bowl 10 to 12 overs, dry it up. I mean, he could bowl a heavy bouncer. So at no stage is there an escape point as a batter, you know, where I can say, I'm going to target this guy. I'm going to take, you know, this one down, because that four skill set was so different, but effective in its own way. So also, I mean, you have to look at the amount of experience that has gone into that bowling attack. I think there's a lot of first class games, you know, between the four of us. But yeah, we just complemented each other so well. And on the day, it's also understanding the role that you need to play. Very often, I think Dale could pick up a couple of wickets and I could feel that, you know, I need to strike as well. But in that, I could lead runs. So it's important for me to also have understood that, you know what, it's my job to really just keep it tight on the one end and let him strike. On a different day, you know, it's my opportunity again, and he has to do that role. So, yeah, we just complimented each other. We understood each other. The language that we spoke to each other, very often hard. You know, you get off it at lunchtime and, you know, a couple of us, they will be in your face. Fucking pull up your socks, or, you know, I need a bit more effort from you. And that, yeah, I think that's what made us so successful, you know, the ability to have straight talk to one another. And like I said, very, very often, you know, harsh talks as well. But at the end of the day, you know, when you sit back and you have that beer, it made it so much more, you know, worth your while.
It's always fascinated me because, you know, certain pitches you get there as a fast bowling unit and you see the pitch on match day minus one and you go, shit, I'm in a hiding to nothing here kind of thing. Like, is as a bowler, you go, okay, listen, Morne, like, this pitch is going to be yours. We need some pace and bounce. I'll come in and nick them off kind of thing. Do you go like that as a bowling unit?
Yeah, I think for us, it's a bit like batting. I think, you know, as batters, you try and sum up in that first sort of five overs what the surface is doing. And then, of course, you know, you need to ask yourself, you know, what's going to make yourself effective? You talk about those different surfaces. I think the biggest mindset for us would have probably been playing in the subcontinent. For me, I know straight away, look, I might not be as effective in the subcontinent as what I'm going to be in, you know, obviously South Africa, England and Australia. But I mean, you look at my numbers, averaging 29 in the subcontinent. So that's also understanding your skill set. So I know I've got to bowl straight the lines. Perhaps lose a slip or two, catch us, you know, in front of the wickets. You want to bring those modes of LBW bold, you know, into play. But it's about understanding, you know, what's going to make you effective on those, you know, various surfaces. But to your point, yeah, I think communication was key for us. And yeah, of course, I mean, Morne in Australia,
yeah.
You know, I mean, pace bounced, but, you know, that's his game. So myself and Dale know we need to keep it tight and allow him to strike. Whereas England and South Africa, perhaps a little bit different because the ball swings. So myself and Dale will be in the game a little bit more. But it's about, you know, relating that message very early on and identifying who's going to be, you know, the biggest threat on the day.
Obviously, your, you know, from a legacy point of view, your legacy is in the Red Bull cricket. But I was looking back at your, and I've always believed that you were pigeonholed very early in your career, but not a lot of people realize that you actually made your international debut from a white ball cricket point of view. Starting out, I mean, white ball, was it always red ball, or did you love white ball as well and wanted to make your mark as a white ball player?
Yeah, I think it perhaps came on the back of having a very successful Waipul tournament in domestic cricket. I remember going over to Ireland, making my debut in Ireland, and then in England, where we had a really tough series against England. We lost that one. But I think initially the communication levels were, you know, were very all over the place with Mickey Arthur in charge. So there was no real direct chat to me as a youngster at the time, you know, to clarify my role per se. So it left me a little bit, you know, in no man's land in terms of, you know, going back and what am I preparing for. Although I used to love the red ball cricket, obviously, a little bit more. But I think, yeah, you mentioned it, that my white ball numbers are right up there with the very best in the game. So it's not like I've said, you know, I only wanted to play red ball cricket. I was always available for, you know, for all formats. But yeah, again, I just think it's just the way things planned out at the end of the day. I think also the 2015 World Cup did me absolutely no good, you know, being pinpointed at. But yeah, I think, you know, like I say, you know, if you can play the longest format and have success in that format, I do feel it's easier to play the sorter two format. So, and again, I think you look at my T20 numbers from, you know, from a bowling perspective, it's right up there.
I remember seeing you playing domestic cricket and playing like one of the local leagues as well. You really love T20 cricket. I mean, actually, your batting seemed to thrive in T20 cricket as well, because you could just come in at 7 or 8 and just tee off and just enjoy your strike rate was over 130 in T20 cricket. So you did enjoy it, and you were a very valuable all rounder in T20 cricket.
Yeah, I think the new ball's always going to be important in T20 cricket. So I always, you know, made it my objective to try and knock one or two over with a new ball.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you say, you come in at 6 and 7s in T20 cricket, you've got freedom, you can play. So yeah, I really enjoy it. Obviously, I mean, I've got the ability to hit the ball out the park. And it's probably a format that, you know, where you can let yourself loose, you can, you know, free up a little bit as opposed to test match cricket. So yeah, I mean, T20 cricket, I really enjoyed my time, albeit more domestically.
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I was a foreigner to, you know, the sort of formats.
You made your List A debut for Devon, actually. It wasn't for Western Province or Cape Cobras. Tell me about that. Like, you went over there?
Tell you a little story, though. So we were obviously there on an exchange program, a Western Province exchange program. Myself and Craig Alexander at the time. And Craig played for, I think it's Portsmouth. I'm speaking on the correction. So what had happened is, obviously in the week, we're not doing anything, but on the weekend you play. Sometimes on a Tuesday, you're required to do a bit of coaching. And this Monday, I decided I'm going to Craig for, you know, for the week. And the minor county games happened to be on a Tuesday. So midweek games. And as I got to Craig the evening, I said to him, I mean, you know, we met a couple of locals there. And he had his hair dyed a certain color. And I said to him, look, I'm here for the week. Let me try something similar, right? And I can remember this cheek peroxide, my hair, blonde. And we went for dinner the evening.
Yeah.
And as we're sitting at the dinner, there's a guy called Alan Swift, who was in charge of the exchange program. My phone rang, and he said, listen, Vern, you're playing in the minor county game tomorrow. I said to him, but Swifty, I'm all the way out in Portsmouth. He says, no worries, yeah, we'll get you there. That's one part of the problem. Second part of the problem is I need to get this dyed black again. And it's something to 10 at night. So there's absolutely no chance I'm going to be able to dye this black again. And anyway, I said to him, look, we've got a problem here. So the more I'm trying to say to Alan Swift is, listen, I think we've got a, you know, a problem far beyond just the cricket. He says, listen, Vern, there's no excuses now. We need you to play booms. Anyway, so pick me up early in the morning. So we arrive at this ground in Exmouth. And as I'm walking onto this ground, I've never played against Leicester. So as I arrive at the ground, who's there? Claude Henderson.
Yeah.
Right, but Claude is looking at me because of the blonde hair. And I mean, he just couldn't identify me at the time, right? And then Brad Hodge played. But as I'm walking to the middle, you know, to go and warm up, Claude says, Vernon, is it fucking yay? Because there's blonde there. And yeah, I mean, it was hilarious. And yeah, I mean, I had a successful game. I remember nicking off Brad Hodge, the great Australian. And yeah, I mean, we actually beat them as a minor county.
Yeah.
And it's very rarely that the minor county actually end up beating these counties. I remember the next game we played Yorks and we got an absolute thumping. Darren Lehman was still playing for Yorks, so they got over 500. But yeah, I think that was my introduction to the first List A cricket. But I had an enjoyable time as a youngster. I remember cycling up the hills to Picton Gardens,
sure.
Cycle back. So, yeah, it was wonderful to be over there during that phase.
And obviously, I mean, did that aid your kind of bowling is suited for England, like no other bowler. Did that kind of upbringing when it came to seam bowling and bowling with a different ball, did it help you? I mean, you played a bit of county cricket throughout your career at various stages as well.
I think I'm a massive advocate for figuring things out yourself. And I think being over there that early or that young in my career gave me the opportunity to get used to the duke ball. It's completely different to how the Kookaburra ball reacts. But I think being over there that young, I mean, I got a nice little insight as to how to control the ball, number one. Mm. And more importantly, understand the behavior of the ball. I think it's obviously the lacquer phase, which is the new ball up until about over, say, 12, 15. Then once the lacquer goes, it actually swings a bit more. So it was wonderful to be over there and get first and experience, off the duke ball.
You started your Western Province career. You didn't go the traditional, and similar to Ash and JP, where you didn't go to the traditional kind of cricket schools. Club cricket was a big part of your life. Just give us a bit of insight into that start of your career.
Yeah, I think it's probably a tougher way of doing it. I remember there was a couple of offers, from these schools that you've just mentioned, to come and play in the southern suburbs. But I've opted against it. I think, again, I had a mentor in Johannes Adams, Georgie van Oort, as a youngster, who wanted me to play club cricket, who wanted me to cement my place with... Obviously, back then, I think we were blessed to have had a couple of guys, Brindley Gilbert. I think you've just missed out on probably, playing for Western Province himself. Duncan Abrams, who was a fantastic seam bowler at the time. So I think that probably aided a little bit more in my growth as a player. I think I could learn a lot faster from these guys because they, they've been around the circuit. They played a couple of B games. And, to sit down with them compared to playing schoolboy cricket, I think probably got me or advanced me a little bit, faster than the normal process of playing schoolboy cricket. But yeah, I think growing up in Ravensmead, playing a lot of street cricket. I think, back then we used to take the tamatikasi, put two on top of each other. Mm. And that's the way we went about our cricket. Mm. Really enjoyed it, sellotape the ball. But that was fun, as a kid. And I think... Again, it all aids in, different ways of playing the game, different ways of, getting hand-eye coordination working. But more importantly, I think, at the time, it did actually allow me to be a kid still. Mm. Although, you're growing up in this big man's world playing club cricket, like you said. Mm. And I remember being at the age of 14, actually playing against, some of the names that you'd have seen, Rashad Majid, Mark the Stedler, JP. Mm. So yeah, I think that definitely aided in the growth of getting there a little bit faster.
Was there a point then that you realized, okay, I think I'm a little bit better than most of the guys I'm playing with here, and I could actually go and play professionally here?
I don't think that thought ever crossed my mind. I think for me it was more about enjoying the game. I mean, I was out there on a Saturday with my mates, playing a game of cricket and trying to win, the game of cricket. So that was really my drive at the time was to, I was never worried about playing for Western Province or for South Africa, for that matter of fact. It was about enjoying that moment that I found myself in. Mm. And yeah, I think I've had some awesome performances, on the club level. But I think the big drive probably came in when I started to be invited for the under 14 Nets, Western Province Nets, the under 15 Western Province Nets. Then, of course, you start realizing that, there's higher honors to be achieved in the game of cricket. But again, it didn't take away, my enjoyment, playing club cricket, really challenging myself to be better. I think I'll also throw in a very interesting stat. Yeah, I know. I still have the record for the most ducks at primary school.
Most ducks in primary school.
And every week, you know, you just want to get better, better, better.
But you were more, of a batter at primary school and at school level than a bowler?
I was more of a batter, I would say, probably till the age of 21.
Really?
20, 21.
Wow, okay.
And, I mean, I was, you know, every time I could get, you know, be in the nets, hit balls, because you just want to break the cycle of, you know, this Audi following you around. But then I remember scoring my first 50.
Mm.
And it was a complete turnaround. In terms of the belief factor, all of a sudden, you know, those notes didn't matter anymore.
Mm.
I got a couple of 50s at school, then started playing club cricket as a junior. Got a couple of 50s at under 14, 13 level. And then I remember being pulled up to the second team at the age of 14 years old. And I mean, you can just think, you know, this little lighty.
Mm.
And I mean, people used to call me Vinga Betin. But I think it was just, you know, I started to believe that I could do this. And yeah, I mean, put up a couple of, you know, valid enough performances to find my way into the first team.
Mm.
And then, yeah, the rest was history.
And then how did the professional career start? Who was the coach, or did you get scouted, or did you just come through the junior ranks?
So yeah, I was the captain of the under-19 Western Province team. I still remember I was in Mossel Bay on holiday when I got the phone call from Peter Kirsten.
Hmm.
Darren Bassett got injured the day before the actual game. It was a Western Province final against the Dolphins. And I mean, I get this phone call from Peter Kirsten. Hey, you're playing tomorrow. I said, sorry, Mr. Kirsten, I'm on holiday. He said, I couldn't queue where you are. You need to find your way back because you're playing tomorrow. Anyway, so I needed to negotiate this with my mom. Travel back to Cape Town. Yeah, I remember rocking up the morning of the game, and all of a sudden, you're sitting alongside, you know, some of the biggest names that you've obviously seen on television. The guys who, yeah, I mean, I've never interacted with them, but it was a wonderful experience. I think as a young kid of 70 years old, getting an opportunity in a final, and then yeah. I got two for 12.
That 50-over final.
No,
the
4-over final. I got 2 for 12.
Yeah.
And yeah, and again, we talk about reference points, and just that little belief of, you know, geez, I've just played this game, played with some of the absolute heroes, you know, and the ability to put up a performance like that, just gave me that little belief. You know, I think I'm one step closer.
Mm.
And yeah, I remember also getting out for a naught against Klusner, trying to pull one, trying to be a little smart ass 17-year-old. But I think, I mean, all of those lessons that you take on board, and it really levels out your playing career. But again, I think blessed in the way that, you know, my career started, both domestic as well as internationally. But yeah, wonderful moment that was.
Your test debut. Newlands is obviously your home. It's played a massive role in your entire career. It seemed like hopefully one day they'll name the Weinberg end, the Vernon Philander end, because you literally own that end. I mean, firstly, I mean, there was you had a good season leading up to that, the domestic season, and then you got the call up for the Australian series. How did that come about? The phone call, and where were you? Can you remember that?
Yeah, geez, I was pretty much close to giving up, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, I think if you look at my record before that, four seasons of really topping that leading wicket-taking chart in terms of average strike rate, etc. But yeah, I remember playing the warm-up game in Potchefstroom against Australia.
Mm.
I speak for the South African A side, of course. I played a game. It was a nasty game because they left a bit of grass on in Potch, and you know, normally Potch is flat. Australians love to go there to prepare because, I mean, everything is, you know, in close proximity.
Yeah.
But I remember we had Masanda Langer, who was bowling the speed of light, and he knocked a couple of ilks on the heads.
Yeah.
And it was a really intense
A-side
game. I mean, obviously for them it was a preparation, but you could sense that they didn't want to bat on that surface. We knocked a couple of them. Obviously, Mitch Johnson came in and, you know, bounced a couple of us.
Yeah.
So that rivalry was right there, you know, from the get-go. Then, of course, the game, it was the last day of the game. And I got a call from Gary Kirsten. He said, listen, I would like you to come and join the team down in Cape Town in preparation for...
The Kirsten family is very much etched into your career.
Absolutely. Both brothers seem to have faith and believe in me.
Yeah.
But anyway, so came down to Cape Town, joined the guys for the first practice session. pardon me. And I think I actually had a good net season. You know, got the ball to talk. Obviously, being at Newlands, understanding, you know, the kind of lengths that you need to hit. And I remember Bouch running up to me and says, "Hey, flipping hell, you've got a good chance of playing here. You know, get yourself in the game. I enjoy the way that you're bowling here because, you know, you're asking the right questions, making life difficult." And I mean, obviously I had a good week of preparation, like I said. And then the night before the test match, 6 o'clock normally they announced the team. Got in the huddle, and Gazza said, "Look, you're playing tomorrow." And I didn't sleep much at night. Somehow in your mind, you're running in at Newlands and you are now picturing, you know, how you're executing your skill set. I think it was probably up until 5 a.m. I haven't closed an eye and I was like, geez, then somehow you need to get, you know, just a little bit of sleep because obviously it's a long day out there. And then, day one of the test match, walking onto Newlands. I had a sense of, you know, this is where I belong. I think having gone through that 4 seasons leading up to, you know, my selection, I really had a sense of flip, you know, I've given it my all. I've prepared well, you know, more than this I couldn't have done. I think the most important part is having put in those performances, you know, against some of probably the best players in South Africa at the time. And look, I walked out there, yes, nerves, butterflies. But once I got into my work, you know, I felt like, you know, I could control myself. And I think that was important. I remember my first wicket being the late full use. I think, you know, once I knocked him over, again, that belief, you know, that sense of you've trained for this, you've worked hard for this opportunity. And again, I think for me also, I'm a guy who sit back and go, flip, you know, I've either done the work or I haven't done the work. And once you've done the work and you get an edge, you're not going to give it up, are you? It was just that, it was more a matter of, flip, I don't have anything to lose. I've got everything to gain and I'm going to give it my all. And I remember us, Australia getting 280, somehow 287, I think it was at the time. Clark played a fantastic innings, got 150. I remember Morning Morkel, you know, coming around the wicket and bruising his whole left side up, you know, with a nasty spell of fast-paced bowling. And then, we went to bed.
That went well.
Jeez, and all of a sudden, from thinking, you know, we've got this, to 97
all out,
96 all out or something. All of a sudden you go, flip, what the hell has just happened, right? And as walking down the stairs, I said to Dale, listen, you know, we need to roll in for about 150 here. And I just remember the smile on Dale's face, almost to say, we've got no chance. And I walked down to Fine Lake, and you know, Murph Hughes, he's got his touring groups out here. And as I'm tying my shoelace, one of the guys said, "Hey, mate, you're pretty fucked, aren't you?" At which point I turn around and I look. I mean, there's nothing you can say, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're not in a great
180 odd behind the eight ball. And I mean, anyway, I'll just put my hand up, whatever. 15 for 5, I think it was. I walk back. No, 15 for 6. I walk back and... I remember there was this coloured hook sitting first row where I was fielding. And he turned around, who's fucked now? But I remember the scoreline 21 for 9.
Yeah.
We had him.
Yeah.
And there was a chance it went down in the gully. So we could have bowled him up for 29.
Sure.
But, I mean, I've never seen Oaks be lit up so quickly. I mean...
Yeah.
That was probably a 45-minute of...
It was 16 overs.
...of bizarre cricket. And, I mean, everybody's talked... Up to today, everybody's still saying, the wicket did this, the wicket... I said, guys, on that same surface...
Exactly.
Umla and Smith got in.
100%.
And they both got hundreds.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's anything to do with the service. I just think it's, you know, it was probably a high intensity of bowling because we needed to strike. But also, I think, if you look at the decision-making... The shot selections, you know, they were really on the poor side. But I haven't seen a session like that, I mean, bar probably the session against New Zealand as well,
yeah,
at the same venue, where you've bowled the team out probably in half a session.
Yeah.
But yeah, the most bizarre piece of cricket. But I think as far as the memory stretch, wow, I don't think you can ever forget that game, you know, let alone be the play of the match at the end of the day. But to have formed part of, you know, that particular fixture on my debut.
Unreal.
I don't think I could have asked for anything better than that.
I remember I was invited to one of the suites there. We were batting and I was like, then all of a sudden we were bowling. And I was like, how are we bowling again? And then you came on and I was like, this is a flipping mad day of Test cricket.
Yeah, I think you look at, I mean, as players, you always look at, you know, the biggest turnaround in Test matches.
Yeah.
I think that's probably one of the greatest of all time. I mean, to have been that far behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
And then to bowl the team out for that cheaply, yeah, and then to end up going winning it in the manner which we did. I remember Hasim Amla, last ball of the day, flashing at one, being dropped in the gully.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he still said, he came off, he said, no, I thought it was still a couple of overs left in the day. So last ball of the day. But I think, I mean, we've had some fantastic games. It boils down to, you know, the mindset of belief, you know, belief that you can do it, belief that you can go out and execute your skill set. And inevitably, you know, you give yourself the best opportunity of picking up wickets. But bizarre, man. I think, yeah, one of the most bizarre test matches that I formed part of. And yeah, one that will probably never escape the mind.
Were there any beers with the Australian guys? There is this recognition between guys sometimes when it's just like, shit, that was a crazy test match. Let's like just acknowledge that, right?
Yeah, I think we've always seemed to have, you know, had drinks with, you know, the opposition, irrespective of, you know, from which country they come from. Sit and, you know, have a bit of a chat. I mean, both camps were like, flip.
that was
bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's one of those test matches that, you know, everyone, I mean, let alone the players, as a spectator, you look back and you go, how the hell did that just happen? And yeah, it's one of those where you're hoping it happened more, more often.
Yeah.
But I think you look at, you know, our record against Australia, especially during that phase, I think we've had a phenomenal run at them. And it's probably one of the oppositions that I've, you know, psyched myself up every time I play against, because you want to make a name against the bigger, you know, the bigger cricketing nations.
Yeah.
So yeah, happy to form part of, I think, you know, that era of cricket where we could dominate, you know, test match cricket over Australia.
What does the captain Graham say in the change room after a test match like that?
Look, I think he's probably one of the sternest test captains that I've played under. He's hard, he's firm. He wants to make sure that he gets the best out of his players. But when it comes to celebrating test matches, I think he's right at the forefront of leading the charge as well. We had a couple of cold beverages to make sure that we celebrate the occasion. But I think obviously 3 days later, we had the test match up in Johannesburg. So quick turnaround. But we did have quite a nice celebration.
You had, listen, it didn't stop there. You had six fifers in your first seven test matches, and 50 test match wickets later. I think it was 100 test matches within 140 days of your test debut. I mean, that start was just unreal, right?
Yeah, I think, it boils down again to the preparation that I've put in. And I think, like I said, I watched the Ayala Dawson, Rashal Willoughby, and they were pretty much set in the way that they've set up batters.
Yeah.
And I think that's when the wobble seam ball came into play for me. And again, it was playing around in nets, you know, trying different various options with wrist position, seam position, you know, out of the hand. And I think, you know, once I started challenging batters, you know, where they can't leave balls, it made me so much more effective. And heading into international cricket, also again, I think with the ball swinging up front, batters, you know, can get into a rhythm against Dale, where the ball swinging, they can start leaving the ball because they can trust the ball swinging. Where I felt if I can nip one or two back up front, all of a sudden it plants a seed of doubt in your mind as a batter. You know, can I leave? Should I play? And that first sort of 10 to 12 overs in international cricket was always key for me, because I know that is my window of opportunity. And whereas they would probably start out, you know, looking to swing the ball, I'd have a lot more intensity in terms of, you know, making that new ball work. So, yeah, that was my window of opportunity. But like you say, fortunately, it worked out for me that first couple of test matches. And again, from a player's perspective, you sit back and you look at that start and you go, wow, You know, that was something real special, you know, to have got to cross that 50 wicket mark in 7 test matches. But more importantly, for me, it was winning test matches for South Africa. And I remember someone sending me an article the other day about, yeah, that start that you're talking about. And, you know, the amount of test matches that we've won consecutively. And yeah, you pride yourself on winning test matches for your country. And again, I think personally, yeah, we'd like to collect these personal accolades, but at the end of the day, it is about, you know, getting the team across the line, and yeah, just happy to have played a massive part in it.
Obviously, you know, certain teams, international teams, go through certain eras where more focus shifts to one day cricket. If I look at the England side with the Owen Morgan leading that side, there was a very much a shift in the white ball cricket, in the 50 over cricket. That era where you played and Graham and etc. was very much focused on test match success. Like, do you think that that success that you had in test matches actually it limited your white ball stuff? Because there was almost like this focus on, we need Vernon Philander fit every single test match that's possible. We need him there.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it hampered on my white ball cricket, but I do feel that, yeah, I mean, there was probably a directive to make sure that, you know, I'm test match ready. And I think as any cricketing nation, you sit down and you say, you know, where is this player going to give me the best?
Yeah.
You know, which format is he best suited to? So I do feel that perhaps back then it was test match cricket as well as, you know, white ball cricket. Sorry, ODI cricket, which is a longer format because you can come back for certain spells as opposed to perhaps T20 cricket. But I do feel that at the time, that unit, yeah, I mean, we were, you know, we were well-oiled. And you look at, you know, the names that featured in that test side over that period of time, all legends of the game, you know, guys who have really put in, you know, massive performances over that period of time. And I think something that we really pride ourselves in was, you know, winning away series, you know, winning away from home. And I think the record spoke for itself until, you know, that whole thing got wiped out.
When Dale and I chatted, his stats were ridiculous overseas. He seemed to enjoy the overseas because he knew he could bowl at Newlands, at Wanderers, etc. But the overseas ones were more challenging, but he seemed to thrive on that.
Yeah, I think it's also, I mean, all of us. So again, I spoke a little earlier about what's going to make you effective. I think Dale had a wonderful skill set of being short, skinny. You know, he can, in the subcontinent, he can get the balls reversed, brings those stumps into play. So he's going to be effective, irrespective, you know, the conditions. But yeah, I think it's something that we're really proud ourselves on, you know, going away and winning away from home. Because ultimately, as a cricketer, you know, you'll be judged on probably more on your away record than, you know, you're playing at home. Because, I mean, at home, you're expected to win. At home, you're expected to dominate. But it's when you're in the subcontinent, you know, when things are getting really tough.
40 degrees in Karachi.
I remember we played a test series against Sri Lanka, and the ball was turning square. We won in goal. And we headed up to Colombo, and we had to block out a session and a half. And Runga Hirath, flip, man. I mean, as a seam bowler, you know, you really shit yourself from time to time when you have to face a Mitchell Johnson.
Yeah.
I've never felt sitting myself to a spinner.
Mm.
I mean, I remember walking out there, and it's the last session, and we need to block this out to win the series. And there's, okay, 6 oaks around the bat. And I'm thinking to myself, surely I can just run down the wicket here.
Yeah.
But you can't. And yeah, I mean, it's probably the first time that I actually feared playing a spinner. I'm like, how the hell do you fear playing a spinner? But it's more the idea of this getting you out than, you know, actually being hit on the body, I suppose.
But yeah.
To have won that series in Sri Lanka, I think gave us a massive boost as well. Of course, South Africa has drawn a series in India before. But yeah, the subcontinent is a tough place to play, man. And like you say, as a player, it's more than mental stuff than, you know, the actual skill set. I mean, we all can bowl a ball straighter, but it's actually knowing, flip, you know, it's gonna be slow. You know, batter's probably gonna come out the crease. You know, what different options do I have? You know, of picking up wickets. So yeah, for me, it was more the mental stuff that needed to be adapted.
Did Dale also spoke about the fact that he hated hearing excuses of the pitch is flat or whatever it is. Like, your job is to get wickets on any surface, no matter what you're given. Was that your kind of mentality as well, that no matter what surface you're given, there's no excuses, I can get guys out?
For me, that's why we play the game. You're going to have different conditions thrown at you as a player. You want to make sure that you prepare well enough, you know, for various kind of conditions. So, yeah, I'm fully with him on that sentiment. You want to make sure that you get better out. I think I remember the test match we played in Mohali. We needed 187 to win the test match, man. And all of a sudden you go, boys, 187, surely we can do this. And I remember Asim Amla sitting at the back and he's like, jeez. This 187 is like 500. At which point,
you know, if Hash says that, then the
At which point I said, "Vern, you're opening the banning." I said, "What?
Hey,
so you're opening the banning?" I'm like, "Okay." So, pads on, flipping out. Took me 5 minutes. Got into the laces from Jadeja.
Yeah.
Before I knew it, I think we were 12 or 5, and like.
Were they just trying to get the? Get you through the new ball, basically.
Yeah, so basically, look, they said, look, you know, be a little bit more positive, be a little bit more aggressive up front. But of course, I mean, second ball and laces, off you go.
But you enjoyed your batting, eh? I mean, even in test matches, you enjoyed your batting.
I absolutely love batting in test match cricket. I love batting overall, but in test match cricket, you know, forming those lower order partnerships, I remember myself and Quinton, we've got 200 partnership stands. So yeah, it's something that you're proud of yourself on. You know, lower order runs very often differentiate, you know, winning and losing, especially at test match cricket, because once teams get to number 7, 8, they almost feel that, you know, now's the time to run through the lower order. But I think as South Africans, we've proud ourselves, you know, that lower order runs. We had a little challenge amongst the bowlers that amongst the four of us, we want to try and get anything between 75 and 100 per test match. So yeah, being able to, you know, to have contributed, you know, in some of those massive partnerships really gave us that edge, you know, when it comes to result time.
That belief that you had in yourself, and some could confuse it with arrogance, but that seemed to really be your defining factor when it came to your game. You knew exactly who you were. And I think that from a bowling point of view, as well as a batting point of view, That must have helped you.
Yeah, I think, look, like I said earlier, I think a lot of club oaks used to call me Windgat back then. But I don't think it was that at all. I think it was just, you know, me having to work extra hard in order to gain that confidence. And once you have it, you know what you've worked for. And again, you know, I got out domestic games, international games, you know, backing myself, you know, And I'm always going to back myself. And I think at the end of the day, it's you against that bet on the other side. And I mean, everything else is, you know, is null and void. So again, you want to back yourself more than, you know, being hesitant, being doubtful. And look, make no mistakes. We all go through that spells, you know, where you doubt, you know, yeah, your ability to bowl on a certain surface. But more often than not, from a mental point of view, I'm going to back myself. I'm going to back myself to knock you over because I've worked damn hard to acquire that skill set, to acquire the ability to execute, you know, on the biggest level. I've worked my ass off. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to back myself more than, you know, doubt. But like I said, we all go through those spells where the confidence are up here and you can run it into Michael Clark and know you're going to knock him over. On a different day, you might be a little bit more hesitant, a little bit stiff, whatever the case might be. But hey, put a new rock in my hand and I'm coming after you.
How much chewing gum did you go through in your career?
I knew you were going to touch on that at some stage.
Did you have a chewing gum sponsor during your playing days?
No, I never had a chewing gum sponsor. But I remember Morne Morkel says to me, "Bro, I don't know how this chewing gum never falls out of your mouth." So I had a wonderful ability to actually run in with a chewing gum.
It was part of your whole persona. There was this persona around you where you knew exactly where you were going to pin that ball, which was something that was, from the outside, it was beautiful to see. Did you know exactly where you were going to plant that ball every time?
For me, it was about training your body to become accustomed to landed ball in that area. So from a technical point of view, I feel so comfortable that I can run up and land the ball in that area because, again, you've put in the hours, you've trained hard. But again, to find that consistency, I think it's more just the body taking over. And I always related to a golf swing. You put the guy 100 meters out, you either have it or you don't have it. But again, it's ample of time, bowling, making sure that, you get your body ready. You can just trust your body. I think very often people ask me, what were you thinking, during certain spells? I wasn't thinking at all. I could almost just put the CD in, press play and just let it be. And that's how I've really trusted my skill set over the years. Like I said, it took a lot of years, obviously, building up to, trusting my action. But once I could trust it, I could really just go out there, press play, and then just execute accordingly.
Is that where the nickname The Surgeon came from? The precision?
So the nickname The Surgeon, I told you earlier that I had this mate from the Titans world there last night at my place. And St. Horne actually wrote a little note for me, keep dissecting, the better technique. It's wonderful to watch you, go about your business. But I think, again, it's international sport is about affording yourself the best opportunity of getting betters out. And that was my way of going about it, was really, zoning in, honing in, on a certain area and make life really difficult for betters. I think there's a couple of betters who have obviously summed it up, what I was trying to do. And they've reverted the pressure in a different manner. Stephen Smith, Joe Root, I think the guy that actually started this nonsense was Hasim Amla, being in my team. And I think they've probably picked it up, him in the nets, trying to sift outside off stump. And what he was trying to do, he was trying to take out this missile's LBW and ball, trying to force me to bowl wider to minimize the risk of, being trapped in front. So he was really smart. And then I could feel, like I said, a couple of other batters, really follow that suit of trying to force me a bit wider, the ball a bit wider outside off stump. But again, I think it's a game where you analyze the opposition. These days, it's all about, I think every team has a, video or analyst. It's about affording yourself the best opportunity of getting us out. And the top six, they knew I was coming for them.
And you dealt with them on a number of occasions, 224, I think, Test wickets later. Happy with that?
Yeah, I think given the scenario, I think with COVID, like you said, I probably would have given myself another year or so. But yeah, COVID struck at a very awkward time where I've obviously planned to go abroad. And it also, I think, during that phase where they've opened up, the county cricket in terms of the cold pack and that sort of thing, yeah, I'd have probably seen myself to play a little bit longer. But yeah, happy with the numbers. I think if you'd given me one test match.
I said happy, very ironically. Of course you're bloody happy with those numbers.
Like I say, I would have probably liked to have added a few more to it. I'd have probably liked to have bowled against the tail enders a little bit more. but yeah, I knew my place in
the team. Can't bowl to the tail enders if you're taking out the top six all the time, and you need a break by the time the tail enders come in.
Nah, man, you want to get fivers and tens. but you're very happy with what I've accomplished.
Listen, I mean, being at that at your final test match was special. The crowd was just, I remember your family being there, and it was just a very emotional. Obviously, nobody knew what was coming a couple of months later, but it was very emotional. I mean, you always had this affinity not only to the South African crowd in general, but the Cape Town crowd. And I mean, I've never seen you as emotional as you were that day. That was something. Your son was there, and that was pretty damn cool though, eh?
Look, I think you obviously go around the world and you bowl a name, as a team, but you also bowl a personal name. And I think I've obviously been one of those players who really interact with the crowd more often than not. Take time out, go and sign autographs, and for the Barmy Army to have delivered that sort of fail was real special. It was always going to be an emotional day. Playing your last test match at home. Not the result that I was after, but look, what Nunes has given me as a player. It's mind-boggling. I knew it was going to be emotional. I couldn't even speak. But walking around, giving my last sort of farewell wave, I just think that was special. But from the Army's point of view, thanks so much, guys. We've had plenty of series, home and away, tough fought. But, the way they get into the game, a lot of times people would write it down to, you know, abuse. I saw completely, the difference. I mean, the same with Australian crowds. You know, very often they can get into your face, trying to make life uncomfortable. I almost saw that as motivation, you know, to get yourself going. So again, I mean, for them to have stood up and sang the songs and, you know, was really special.
It was a respect thing rather than abuse.
Absolutely. Like I said, I mean, it all boils down to how you perceive it as a player. Very often, I mean, they can get rowdy. You know? They want to get under your skin. But I would say to any young player going out there in today's world, I think the Poms are going down under again. Use it as fuel. Use it as motivation. But again, it boils down to the character at the end of the day, I suppose.
Talking about England and that series, that was the series. I can't let you leave without that that roast with you and Joss Butler. Talk me through that from your side of the stumps.
Look, I mean, up to today, I still get a lot of, Oaks sending me clips, especially my mates in Durban.
But that look that you gave him was deadly.
No, look, I mean, I was looking down and I didn't expect Joe Root to throw the ball back at me or to at the stumps. And obviously, when I looked up, the ball was, three quarters of the way down. And obviously, I'd lift my hands. But also, I think having played a lot of Test match cricket, you understand the consequences of saying something back. I can tell you, there's a lot of words boggling in my mouth that I wanted to say to him.
Yeah.
But I think, given the nature of where he was at in his Test match career, I think he was obviously under pressure as well. Yeah. So, sometimes you need to be the bigger person in the picture.
That's good. Because the response, I think, they might have had to turn off the stump mic if your response came out.
I got a 25% Mets fee fine the next game, though, when I got him out.
Worth every cent.
I won't tell you what I said.
Worth every cent, sir. Worth every cent. Vern, we've got a section called the Declaration, which kind of wraps up the episode.
You want me to sign it for you?
I can sign it, yeah. But this week we've got... our partners, Fields, who are partners of the Declaration. It's quick fire questions. No yes or no, just like first thing that comes to your mind, okay?
Okay.
First cricket memory that made you love the game?
Benton and Hedges.
Nice. Your worst ever roommate on tour?
Jeez, Stian van Zyl.
Okay, that's the second time actually somebody said Stian van Zyl. He's obviously got a reputation. One cricketing superstition or ritual that you followed in your career?
I'm not superstitious at all, but just give me a new ball.
Nice. That's a dangerous one. One batsman who you just love bowling to, local or international?
He goes by the name of H. the Ackerman.
You just had his number.
I wouldn't say I had his number, but I just got under his skin for some reason. Some reason he just hated me, and I remember playing a game at Bulambing Park with one over to go, and Sol Willoughby said, "Vern, I need you to bowl this last over and you will get him out." And I still said to him, "The fourth one is coming back." First left, second left, third left. I said, "This one's coming back."
Yeah.
Coming back, so LBW, and it was, I promise you, it was the biggest debacle out in the middle. So yeah, I really enjoyed the battle between myself and HD.
That's cool, man. One bowler who you would have bowled for your life, and you can say yourself.
That's a difficult one, but I probably have to go with Dale Steyn.
Nice. I thought you were going to say yourself.
I'll back myself.
You trust don't me. Have to be trust humble.
Me.
You and
no, trust me, I'm backing myself more than Dale, but I'll give it to him.
And then final question, the most underrated cricketer of your generation.
Wow, that's a tough one. I'll probably give it to Stian van Zyl as well. I think just given the amount of talent that he had, yes, he had a bit of a rough time, obviously in India, but wow, he was classy, man. And you could watch him play all day long.
He's an absolute beautiful player. We need to get him onto the podcast. If he's not umpiring or fishing or something like
he's,
that.
He's advanced quite a bit with his English, so I think he'll be okay. He'll be okay these days.
Listen, Vern, I think one final question just to finish off. What is the legacy that you want to have left on South African cricket? On world cricket, it's not just South African.
Yeah, I think it's a standard that we've set in terms of, where bowling was at the time. I think we obviously got taken or taken over that baton to make sure that, you know, we advance the game. We want to make sure that the standard of bowling is right up there. And I always believe that at the end of the day, you wipe out the name and you look at the numbers at the back end, and that's who you will be remembered as. So again, you want to pass on the baton to a Kagiso Rabada. You look at his numbers now, phenomenal. And that's the sort of standard you want to see, you know, at the international game. But more importantly, the message that he's sending, you know, right round, you know, to the guys playing, you know, schoolboy cricket. They know the level that, you know, of quality, or the quality of level of bowling that you need to have in order to reach the top. So that's my legacy that I would like to leave behind.
The legend, the Vern, because the Vern speaks in the third person. And we love the Vern for his confidence and his career and his legacy. And you're doing your thing in the business world now, in the brand ambassador world now. Vern, thank you for inspiring an entire generation. Got a gift from my friend here at Bootlegger. I know you like your coffee. You need some. You need some coffee. Thank you very much for being here on The Biggest Man in Cricket. Wishing you all the best with all your business ventures and every success. Thanks, my man.
Thanks, look. We're back. Good to see you, brother.
You too, bro.